Okay. Well, yeah, those spiritual realms that we have been given, and I'll go into some of what they are in a minute, we need to not just engage them as an exercise. None of what I'm talking about needs to be explored as an experience. If you're just looking for experience, then that experience is all you'll get. What we need is a relationship. So all the experiences are leading us into a deeper relationship with God. And it's the relationship that we're pursuing, not the experience. Experiences are great to affirm the relationship and to help the relationship. But if you're just looking for supernatural experiences, really, then you'll get them, but it won't make an awful lot of difference to you. Which is why people chase experiences all the time. And they don't really change, because they're looking for an instant thing. This whole program and what we're doing, you have to grow. You take as long as it takes. If it takes a year to build your spirit to a point where you're able to see, take the year. If it takes 2 years, take the 2 years. It doesn't matter how long. Some people, when they engage, they run through or listen to all the material. I mean, it's like probably 200 sessions of material. They listen to it all in 2 months or something. And they come back and say, I've listened to all the material. What's next? So I sort of smile to myself when people do that and say, well, how much of what you've listened to are you living? You know, it's like, what is a lifestyle now for you? And they're like thinking they're going to get brownie points because that's the religious system we live in. You know, listen to this stuff, buy more tapes, buy more CDs, buy more downloads, listen to more. How much are you living? You know, because most of them aren't actual how-tos. They're someone sharing revelation without the how-to. And I like to share, well, this is how you do this, you know. So, you know, 1 Corinthians 6:17, the one who joins himself to the Lord is one spirit with him. Now, that is a very short verse. It has the depth of meaning that I doubt we'll ever come to the end of what it is to be joined to the Lord and one spirit with him. But we have an invitation to enter into that path that will bring us into a deeper and 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 deeper relationship with God into the ages to come, because there's so much more. In when we're joined to him, we can flow from the inside out as we're in that oneness with God, with heaven, with ourselves. It's all about oneness. It's all about unity, all about coming together in that sense. So every day, when I open my first love gate and I'm the Holy Spirit's presence in the river of life, and I drink from the fountain and I yoke myself to Jesus and I yield the seat of rest and government to the Father, literally what I'm doing is saying that the bench of three, Father, Son and Spirit, the government of heaven is now in me, and I've made an agreement with it, so I make a fourth. So you have these numbers in Scripture, two forming an arc. And then an arc forms, you have a portal that can open or a manifestation that can take place. Three, forming government, like Father, Son, and Spirit. Four is a doorway. So when I say yes to the bench of three, I create a gateway in my life for the heaven and for the flow of God to flow through me. If I don't say yes, I may have even have this wonderful relationship with Father, Son, and Spirit, and I have intimacy, but the responsibility that flows from that intimacy never manifests, because, like a lot of people, they're still soaking and soaking and soaking and having soaking meetings and soaking meetings and soaking meetings, and it never gets anywhere because it's all about just soaking. I love soaking. I love the intimacy. I love the pathway of relationship. But as sons, we're responsible. We're co-heirs in the kingdom. And therefore, we have to become responsible. Now, some people want responsibility because it gives them position and power, and they don't want any intimacy. Neither one of those positions will work. You need both. So when I come, I'm making an agreement with God and his kingdom, his government, and I come into agreement, and I'm saying, now I am here as a channel for you to flow through. You know, well, I better not say channeling, because that will get me in trouble. But you see, but it's just a counterfeit for Jesus saying, the Father in me does his works through me. He was a channel for God and the Spirit to work through him. We become channels. Now, we cooperate with him because we're one. So it's not like I'm a channel which has got nothing to do with it, so I'm just a conduit. I'm actually a channel who is involved in the process. So I'm actually responsible, being joined to Christ, to do things into the sphere that's flowing out. So this gate, this doorway, this portal is for heaven to flow through me into the earth. And then it becomes a manifestation of the government of the four faces of God, for heaven to manifest into the earth. The order of Melchizedek, lion, ox, eagle, man, which is the kingly, prophetic, apostolic, priestly functions of the four faces of God. And that, again, is three faces which represent Father, Son, and Spirit, and one face which represents us. Because God has called us into government. And there's no fullness of government, even though three is the manifestation of government, and Father, Son, and Spirit are completely governmental in their own right. And you have, even in that, when you see the number nine, because three times three, because they have three attributes each, Father, Son, and Spirit. So you have the way, the truth, and the life. You have righteous peace and joy, judgment, justice, holiness. There's nine, the nine stones on Satan's body. So you see these nines, these patterns of nines, nine strands of DNA. Biblical, God's a mathematician. So everything has numbers behind a lot of, you know, all of it. So you have this nine is a very interesting number. It's a complete number. So two nines are 18. One plus eight is nine. Three nines are 27. Two plus seven, nine. Three nines, 36. Three plus six, nine. Always complete. And yet God has chosen to have the fullness of government include us. So 12 is the number of government, which includes our three stones, body, soul, and spirit. Just as on the breastplate of the high priest was 12 stones, not nine. So when we're going to see a full manifestation of the government of God, it must be when we come into agreement between heaven and earth. So you have the function of three, lion, ox, eagle, in agreement with the man. And the man, which is representing of our side, the priestly function, we actually agree with heaven and earth. And if there's no agreement between heaven and earth, there's no window of open. Even though you have full government here, it cannot manifest in the earth until we come into agreement to open the window, because God has given the authority for the planet or the whole created order to us. So it's an amazing thing that God has chosen to include us. You know, and he's still waiting for us to come to the place where we're mature enough to do it, which is why we're not fully yet revealed in sons on the earth. But one day we will. So if I come into agreement here, what I'm doing is agreeing with heaven, and I'm being a gateway for heaven to come into the earth, because I've now formed that gateway in that. So the whole kingdom of God needs to flow through me, around my life, rivers of living water. River of life needs to flow so it can bring life through us to touch the world around us. You know, that's how the world is going to get changed and transformed, when heaven and God's river and God's life flows out through us. And we, as I said earlier, Peter's shadow was an example of that atmosphere that he created. So I first engage in relationship in first love. I'm baptized into the Father, Son, and Spirit. So I am clothed with them. I'm skinned with them. I have the armor of light, which is the Holy Spirit around me. I have the armor of righteousness, which is the Jesus around me. I have the armor of God, which is the Father around me. Now, when you're baptized into those armors of God and the light of presence, the enemy is not going to touch you other than what he's already in you in. So the enemy getting you from the outside is impossible. But if there's anything in you, then there's still access, which is why we need to cleanse our gateways and make sure that we're pure in our heart, because the pure of heart will see God in fullness. So I drink living water from the wells of salvation, John 4, every day. So I consciously draw my supply of life from heaven and not from the world around me. I yoke myself to Jesus every day to be discipled. You know, you have that picture of the yoke, the oxen, two oxen put together, experience one, new one, making sure that you go in the right path. You know, and so that's what Jesus does in discipleship. There's another concept of that in terms of rabbis having followers, and they were yoked to the rabbi by a string, and they had a whole load of strings following people behind them. And so where the rabbi walked, they walked. So if the rabbi went up, they would have to go up, otherwise their neck would be stretched. Yeah, so it was another picture of it. I only want to be in the field that Jesus wants me to go in. So it's like, I don't want to go into my own field, plow my own furrow in my own direction. I want him to lead. So I yoke myself to him. And in yoking myself to him, I learn from him to be gentle and humble in heart. And when I was in Encounters in Heaven, Jesus sat me down and he taught me from Matthew 11, 28 to 30, and actually just unveiled it. And it was just an amazing thing to be taught by the living word. I mean, it's like no preacher you can ever get on earth. You know, it's amazing. And it's been foundational of my life to come into a place of rest. Because all those who are weary and heavy laden, come to me and find rest. Take my yoke upon you. It's like, my yoke is easy, my burden's light. And you will find rest for your souls. And that understanding of being gentle and being humble is all to do with identity. And it's to do with surrendering identity. Because Jesus knew who he was completely, and yet he only did what he saw the Father doing. So he never used the power and authority that he had outside of the context of the Father's heart. And that's what we can get if we're yoked to Jesus. And then I surrender the seat and rest and government, the throne of on my spirit, in my spirit, to the Father, so he can father me. Now, I want to be fathered. You know, it's like the only way I'm going to be a son is to be fathered. And the only way I can be fathered is to get a relationship with the Father and yield and surrender my identity to him, which is my whole process every day. Now, you know, it used to take me ages to do all this stuff because I was building up this pathway and understanding. Now it's like, you know, instant, really, of how it happens. But sometimes I linger there. You know, sometimes I just don't want to go away from being embraced in first love. It's like, oh, this is such a great place to be, you know. But often, you know, it's like, I know that I have responsibility. I know I have things to do. So this is the place that leads me into that. So daily, I come into agreement with the Father, Son, and Spirit as a bench of three. 3 + 1 = 4. Then that gateway increases through me in that way. So I'm yielding. I'm yielding, you know, opening up my spirit, extending my spirit in oneness with the Holy Spirit. My spirit expands around my soul, around my body, and I create this atmosphere. And that was what we were talking about this morning, the vibrational frequency of love filling that atmosphere. Isaiah 54 is a picture of that. Enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch out the curtain of your dwellings. Spare not, lengthen your cords, strengthen your pegs, for you will spread abroad to the right and the left. So there is the thing that we cannot remain restricted and small, because there is no end to the increase of his government. It has to increase. This scripture, Isaiah 9:7, there will be no end to the increase of his government and of peace. Often we forget that bit of peace, because peace means wholeness. Nothing missing, nothing broken. The restoration of all things has to extend. Because on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it, to uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore. So this is something which is not going to stop. You know, that's why when we go into the ages to come, people think that when Jesus comes, wraps all this up, hands the kingdom back to the Father and all that stuff, then that's it, eternity. It's not. We're not going to live in eternity. God is in eternity. We can access eternity, but we're not living in it. Because in eternity, it's all now. So you can't have an increase in eternity. So there will be ages to come, and there's different time frame, because time contains sin, and once everything's dealt with, then sin will be no more. So it's very difficult to imagine an age with no sin, because we live in a sinful world. But when sin is no more and the enemy is no more and it's all been wrapped up and dealt with, then the ages to come are places without sin, which gives us, you know, a totally different mindset from what we've got now. So Jesus described this at the beginning of the church in Acts. You will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you. You will be my witnesses, both in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and even the remotest parts of the earth. So it has to start in Jerusalem, in your own life, in your own spirit. But it has to go beyond you to create atmosphere, call that Judea around your life, and then wider. So there will be a Samaria to your government. And for some of you, that might be even wider into wider spheres. And some people will have worldwide spheres. You know, some people will have spheres which go beyond that. You know, but we've got enough to do yet on this planet before we worry too much about the other galaxies, you know, and other things that are out there. So when we're back in our rightful place and this is restored, then all the other stuff will be interesting. So Daniel 2:35, the stone struck the statue, which became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Which is talking about the kingdom. So the kingdom will fill the earth one way or another. So this mountain is the mountain of the house of the Lord, which is going to be raised up above every other mountain, expanding the kingdom to fill the earth with the glory of God. Because we know the glory of God will fill the earth like the waters cover the sea, it says. I mean, it's a weird statement, isn't it? Waters covering the sea. You can't even have sea without waters, can you? So it's like, but it's just saying, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen in the future. So there's an answer to creation's groan for freedom, because creation itself is in bondage, waiting for freedom that's going to come from us. So this is a mandate that God gave Adam and Eve. This is our mandate, Genesis 1:28. God blessed them, so he empowered them to succeed and prosper, to fill the earth, to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue and rule. Every one of us has the capacity to use that mandate to fill their spheres. And it's as each one of us drinks the living water, has rivers of living water flowing through us, starts to fill the spheres of government that we have, then the world, the earth, will be filled with the glory of God and the kingdom of God. It isn't that Jesus is just going to turn up one day and say, okay, right, the whole world's full of the kingdom. It's through us. We're the ones who are responsible for the kingdom to fill the earth. And if we don't fill our spheres of government, then there's going to be a lack of government. So we're responsible in this. This initial thing creates the trickle, which is what flows under the threshold. So we can be fruitful as a house of God. But we can't stop at that. It's got to go further and wider than that. So literally every day, I extend and expand my spirit outwards and I cover or overshadow the atmosphere around me and then wider in my spheres of government. And I then extend it around my seven mountain spheres and any corporate benches that I'm governmentally responsible for, I extend that my spirit around them so that I'm connected and tuned and can flow into it. So whatever then I go and do in heaven, you know, and so none of this is what I'm doing in heaven. This is all what I'm doing in preparation for when I go to heaven or when I engage where I am in heaven, so it's got somewhere to go. And if you've not created this sphere, where is what you're doing in heaven going to go to? This is why it's so important to establish a extending of your tent pegs, because then you have more capacity for heaven to flow through you and flow out and engage that which is around. So my families, I have a home, you know, my home, family, ecclesia, area, region, my freedom, apostolic resources, spheres. They're all some of the spheres that I extend my spirit around. So before I came here, I extended my spirit around Dallas so that I could engage with what was going on here. And sometimes it's like, sometimes I get free permission to share some of the things that I engage in, others I don't. And some of it's because, you know, I'm not here to tell you what to do in Dallas. You know, it's like you are responsible for here or wherever you live when you, because you've flown in from places. You know, that's your responsibility. I'm only here to help facilitate and encourage you, to support you that you can do it. You know, but it's your responsibility. My responsibility for my physical spheres are at home, you know, in my area, in my region, and into my nation. So I'm preparing the space for the fruit to multiply and for it to be filled. You know, so I mustn't become a Dead Sea. You know, if any of you have ever been to the Dead Sea, you know, I've floated in the Dead Sea, it's dead. It's full of so much salt and so much chemicals, heavy things, that you can float in it. But there's nothing much living in there. Not too many fish. Yeah, it is, because it's just, there's a change taking place with it. Because God is doing that as a demonstration of what he wants for his people, that we do not end up dead because the river is flowing in us and not flowing out of us. So it's like, this is, again, it's an illustration or something.
Mike,
so,
I have a
yeah.
When you're expanding your spirit, you yeah. say around Valus, are you waiting on the Lord in the process of that to see what he wants, or are you looking, or is it both?
Well, I only did it because I had a mandate to come here. You know, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have a mandate to come. So, you know, I want to create an environment here that I can flow into to bring blessing. Because it's all about blessing. You know, I've not come to do anything governmental, because that's your responsibility. But my responsibility is to bless. So I'm looking at, I want to create an environment where blessing can flow. And so, yes, I can engage and see some things. But it depends what the mandate is. See, my mandate in coming here was not governmental in the same way that my mandate has been some other places. You know, because this is the first time I've been here, and it's like I operate relationally. You know, so I don't want to do stuff without relationship. You know, and without a relationship, then nothing in a kingdom really functions. Otherwise, it becomes a structure. So when I've been given governmental responsibility to establish government, which I do when I go up to Nebraska, I have a mandate to go when I'm going to Kearney, and we're doing this national summit thing, to establish benches of three around the whole nation. Now, hopefully some of you might be there and you might respond to the call that God's going to give to establish some of the government as benches down here governmentally. You know, but I know what I'm called to do because I have clear mandates in some of those things. But I'm literally at home. I know around the church I can cover it. It's in my heart, therefore I can cover it with my spirit, and then I can pour blessing into it, and I can be aware of what's going on into it. I have access to bring government into it. Heaven can manifest into it. And some of the declarations and decrees and things I do for my mountain in heaven go into that sphere and create an environment where what God's purpose is for that season can start to take place. Then what I'm called to do is to equip others. So what I do in pouring into that is to release blessing so that others can prosper and fulfill their mandates, which is why I don't do an awful lot. You know, I make laws sometimes and legislation, and I help model things for people, but I take a back seat when it comes to doing the government, because I don't want to get in the way. Because people will always look at me and say, well, you know how to do this stuff. Well, we'll wait for you to do it. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be a cork in the bottle and a restriction. So I prepare. Most of my mandate is preparing the atmosphere, preparing for people to flourish and grow, for people to mature into government. And I call that forth, and I call forth government in the realms of heaven. I send angels out. I do all sorts of legislative stuff. I have laws and legislative documents that calls me to, I use to bring freedom into people, to remove restrictions off people, all so that they can flourish and grow and fulfill their purpose. You know, and most of them would only benefit from what I'm doing. They don't actually know what I'm doing, because I don't tell people most of the time, other than where it can be used as an illustration for, this is how you do government. You know, so our bench of 12 and has, we have a statute book with a record of all the things that we have legislatively people can use. So, you know, I share some of the things, but in a sense, you know, my boundaries are expanding and my influence is increasing to bless. Not that I want fame and fortune and people to know who I am, because that's not what it's about. You know, if I did that, I wouldn't be doing this. I would be doing something different. And I really don't care about people knowing who I am or what I'm doing, other than the fact that I want relationship with people to bless them. That's the whole point of it. So, you know, my spheres of destiny, you know, are, I'm aware of what they are, and I'm responsible for that as it is in heaven, so that it can expand into the earth and bring blessing. Because that's the whole mandate that we live under. You know, every family of the earth blessed. And that's God's desire. That was the covenant with Abraham, to bring blessing to all the families of the earth, to bring them back into sonship restoration. So I'm preparing the spheres around me so I can establish heavenly realms can flow through me. You know, so many people don't do this step, so they keep doing things in heaven and wondering why nothing's changing on the earth. because they aren't actually creating the spheres in which change can take place. So we're responsible to establish this. This is why I'm talking about this before we go and do some governmental things. Because actually you have to have a sphere that it governs into. So I want the river of life to go from a trickle to a stream to a river to a torrent. You know, I don't want a trickle. So the only way a torrent can flow into it, if there's enough expansion for the torrent to flow in. So when our atmosphere and when the atmosphere we're engaging in, when we rule it, we do not have to be subject to the atmosphere of the earth that we're under. Because we're all under the atmosphere. Because the atmosphere is in the realm above. And culturally, most of what goes on in Dallas is actually controlled by what's in the atmosphere. And what's above that atmosphere that's actually directing what goes on in the atmosphere. And people on the earth are mostly puppets. You know, they're subject to culture. They're subject to what's going on. They don't even know why most of the time. And then sometimes you'll have something that kicks off in the atmosphere. Like recently, the whole thing with, you know, the race things and all that stuff was going on was because of what was stirred up in the atmosphere. And you do have something in the atmosphere here that affects those things. Because you are called to be in this area a catalyst for change, to instigate change. But because of the negative side of it, it's instigated change in the negative way. So you go right back to JFK and what happened here at JFK, this place instigated change, and just not good change. And the same with what went on recently, it stirred up. But what it did, you know, what it actually did, and you can see, well, this is a bad thing, or actually you can see, well, the enemy overplayed his hand and now we recognize more of what's going on. Actually, it took a sticking plaster off. Because governmental legislation that was done in the 60s and 70s in terms of the civil rights movement and all those things to give everyone equal rights put a legislative sticking plaster over a wound that was never healed. So that government or legislation cannot produce the change in the culture of people in those things.
Are you saying like a Band-Aid?
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah, a Band-Aid. We have cultural language differences. You must know what a sticking plaster is. So yeah, like a Band-Aid. So effectively,
plaster.
Yeah.
You're
going to
wall somewhere.
Yeah, no. So we call Band-Aids plasters. You see.
We call them this.
Yeah. So in reality, there was a wound that the government tried to solve by putting in legislation into your statute books. But it never dealt with the divisive thing that was underneath and the wounds that were in the culture, which go right back to your constitution. So when we go to Kearney, I want to deal with the constitutional issues that have created division in your nation. Because your whole nation is divided. The United States is just a total misnomer. Wow. It's like you are not united. And particularly Texas. Because Texas, even in what it's known as, the Lone Star State, it's all about being independent. And I know there's a whole movement that you want to succeed from the Union. Yeah. You know, now I don't want to get into politics, but there's a spiritual thing behind that. Because there's a sense where, actually, Texas is called to display something, to create unity and draw people together to change. But because of what's going on in the atmosphere, you want independence so that you don't have to be to do with anyone else. It's never going to work, you know, but those things are in the atmosphere, and what's going on the earth is subject to that atmosphere. As Christians, until we clear the atmosphere, which you're never going to do until you deal with what's above and start ruling, which is why we need benches of three in the Kingdom of God area for the area, the state, and there'll be myriads of benches of three with different mandates for what God's doing in this area. Until that's in place and you've cleared away what's in there, you won't tackle the atmosphere and then nothing will change. Most Christian things try to do things to change the people on the earth. You can never change the people on the earth sufficiently until you deal with the atmosphere, and you can't deal with the atmosphere until you've been above it. All the intercession, spiritual warfare, and everything else that people have been doing, spiritual mapping and all those things, have been done in this realm, under the atmosphere. And then they've tried to bind loose all the stuff and things. And I'm not against spiritual mapping. Spiritual mapping is a really interesting and good thing because you have information to know what to do in the legislative things in the courts. You know, as well as getting information in the court, you can take information in the court that you already know and deal with it. But essentially, we have to create our own atmospheres under our own open heaven that literally punches a hole in the atmosphere, and we have the angelic realm going up and down around, so we don't have to live under culture. But our responsibility is not just to selfishly live under our own atmospheres, which is, you know, why I'm always happy, no matter where I am, because it's just like, hey, it's all good. It's a great atmosphere over me, everywhere. You know? Yeah. I had so much fun up in the north, because they were northwest. They were like, oh, this is the hardest place in the U.S. I say every place will tell you it's the hardest place in the U.S. But it's like, you know, but there's something about it because of the North Gate and they were the very north and whatever. And I was like, they were sort of kept telling me how bad it was. And I was saying, well, no, it's really good here. It's just wonderful. I'm having such a wonderful time here. It's such a wonderful atmosphere here. And I was just teasing him a little bit because we needed government there. And the government they do have there, because they have now setting up some really fantastic governmental things up in the Seattle area particularly, they're really changing the atmosphere. They're starting to pull down some of the territorial things that were there. You know, I went there and I showed them that were these three particular principalities that were functioning in their whole area. And I didn't have the authority to deal with them. I had authority to silence them while I was there, but I couldn't deal with them. It was their responsibility to deal with them. I mean, I've just been thrilled to listen to the testimonies of what they're doing. They've set up regional benches of three. They've got four of them. They've got a council of 12. You know, they've dealt with stuff on Mount Rainier. They've dealt with stuff on some of the other mountains up there, which represent some of the places where these things operate. You know, it's been wonderful just to think, wow, they've got it. They're going for it. You know, and yeah. No more than I'm telling you. You already know. You know. You know. Some of that is what you will do when you start to form government here. You know, you will start to take the authority in that realm, and you can then start to operate and clear the atmosphere. No one is going to clear the atmosphere overnight. To start with, before you can clear the atmosphere, you have to connect with the principalities, powers, and rulers, which are the correct angelic realm that have been assigned to this area, get to know them so that when they're enthroned on the thrones in the three levels of the atmosphere of the earth, you will administrate through them. So most people don't even know what, you know, they all think principalities and powers and rulers are bad. They're not. They're neutral. It's what occupies the principality is the issue. And what you've got occupying yours are pretty independent. You know, and they are counterfeiting what the real ones want to do. And principalities are not about territory. You know, that's what the false ones do. They tie people to territory and control their territory and therefore defend their territory, rather than a principality is there to reflect an aspect of God's nature and character which will bring to the overall. It's like your nation is a bunch of flowers. And they all have different fragrances, and they release an overall fragrance which will bring the glory of God and the fragrance of heaven. But everyone's not got a fragrance because their principalities and stuff are not the right ones yet. You know? So there is stuff that, you know, you can be affected if you don't rule. You will be under something unless you're over it. So what you're doing is creating the sphere that when you're over it, you can fill in without going through the atmosphere. So you being a gateway means that heaven can come to earth without going through the atmosphere, which is why you can create change in your own personal circumstances, even when you're under an atmosphere that's not changed yet, because you're not subject to it anymore, because you're flowing from above it through you as a gateway, not through it. No. So when Daniel was praying and asking God for help, the angel had to come through the atmosphere and was held up in the atmosphere because of what was going on in the atmosphere, and then they had to send reinforcements to try and get it through. You know, 21 days it took to get that through the atmosphere. So you know there are things that go on in the atmosphere, notice people didn't go in the atmosphere and try and get the thing. God sends, or we send, angels into the atmosphere to deal with it. It's not something that we do, spiritual warfare and all that stuff. We do not tackle the atmosphere. We send angels when we're above and we have authority above to deal with the atmosphere. So don't tackle things out of sequence or out of order. It can be dangerous. You know, Robert Anderson tells the story of the two ladies, I think, who were in their 20s or something, who decided that they were going to take on the principality of New York. And they didn't know how to do it from above. And so they started to go at this thing as what people do from below. And they may well have been doing all sorts of spiritual mapping things or whatever. They both died in the same year from cancer. And they're both perfectly healthy before that. So, you know, don't step outside of your jurisdiction. I don't say that to create fear, but I'm saying it's serious that you remain within the jurisdiction that you have and the mandates that you're given. And you can never do anything from below. You have to establish it first as it is in heaven, so that it can manifest through the gateways that you create in the earth.
Is that your own land?
Your own land. Yeah, because your own land, if it's within your sphere, which it will be, you create the atmosphere, which can be not subject to the culture, which is going on in there. So you can, but you have to fill it. You know, so what you do then from your mountain, which is the mountain that reflects that governmental position, you make the declarations, you decree things, you call things into being, you rule and govern it from there, which goes through you into that sphere, and therefore you not have to be subject to anything else. But you have to do it from above. Most people have not learned to do it from above, so they're always trying to go to and fro doing stuff on the earth. When you go up there and it flows into the earth, which is why, you know, this whole teaching is about.
My favorite question.
Yeah.
Can we back up this? So you were talking about the principalities, powers, and rulers. Are you saying there's good and bad, or there's one that's neutral and what's affecting them?
No.
It's
like a position. And so a principality, there are lots of them be over this area, but there'll be, let's say, the major principality over this area will have a name and will have a effect. Now that's because the principality is a position of government which carries responsibility for something. When you try and deal with that, what it's going to be replaced with is an angel who has the responsibility for the atmosphere here.
So there's a demonic one taking that position.
Yes, it's a position. Let's say there's a throne. Let's say there's a throne that's called a principality. So if there's nothing on the throne, then there's no one in authority. But what's on the throne is a fallen angel. When you displace that fallen angel, you replace it with a correct angel. And that means a principality, a ruler, and a whatever the other one was. You know, each one of them is a throne. Because it talks about thrones, principalities, powers, and rulers. So there are three. Everything's a government. So there are a bench of three that operates in the atmosphere, which one of them, just like a bench of three might be, you know, lion, ox, eagle. There will be a bench of three, which is a principality, power, and a ruler. And each one of those thrones at the moment is actually occupied by a fallen angel, which is one of the enemy's hierarchy, because he knows the redemptive gift and purpose for this area, and he is counterfeiting it and using the authority to, A, stop the expansion of the kingdom, but to counterfeit and establish his own kingdom, because he wants people to worship him. You know, and when people come into agreement with whatever those things are, then they worship them. And all the sin that we commit is essentially worshiping the enemy. So fear, if you have fear in your life, you're worshiping the enemy. Now, I know, you know, people don't like to hear that, but the reality is what you're doing. because you're trusting more in the enemy's power to hurt you than God's power to protect you. Yeah, so it creates worship because you're yielding to that.
You just said they were neutral, and I was
well,
in the office.
The thrones are thrones. Right. It's what on the throne that actually is important. Now, we have to engage with the correct angelic orders to call them into the establishment of those thrones. But to do that, you have to remove the legal rights of why those are there that are there. And that's where the sort of spiritual mapping type stuff can come in. Or you can just do court cases, but you have to have the authority. And there isn't the governmental authority yet at that level here to do that. And that's why God wants to establish it. He wants to call people to come into authority as benches. Ecclesia need to be established here who function under heaven. And there aren't. I'm not saying there are any, I don't know, but there are not many. And God wants to establish it. I'm sure some of the group we are meeting here, you're called to establish that, to have the structure differently, to empower the vision and the things that God's calling. And there are probably many others of them around that are not yet responding to the blueprint or the mandate, because they're still either not hearing it because they're covered by something that's not allowing them to hear the call, or they're starting to hear the call and they're probably feeling, oh, I can't do this. Because a lot of people, God wants an amateur in the new, not a professional in the old. So you don't have to be an expert to receive a mandate and a blueprint to establish something new. Because the way you establish something new is to do it new, not old. So forget all the ways you know how to do church and engage God to give you revelation and a mandate and instruction and direction to do church a new way. So I don't call it church anymore, really, because church is an Anglo-Saxon word which does not really mean ecclesia or kahal. So ecclesia is really what the Greek word meant, which is a gathering of people out of something into something, which is a blueprint from heaven.
So principalities, powers, or forces of darkness, spiritual forces, blah, blah, blah. So are those are levels? Which one does it go from? I mean, is principalities the highest? Or
no, principalities is the lowest.
And it goes up from there?
Yeah.
And so
the actual things are principalities, powers, rulers, then the whole wicked forces of stuff. Those are the things that are on them right now. So they are on those thrones in
so
wickedness.
So that fourth thing, that's the thing that's sitting on the thrones, that's what you're saying?
Spiritual forces.
Yeah.
Of wickedness.
Yeah, those spiritual forces.
Those are the things that are on the thrones.
Yeah.
And so when we, you know, work together to legislate and do all that kind of stuff, do we have to, as we're doing repentance and identification or repentance and all of those kind of things and trying to remove the legal rights or whatever, I'm new to this, so I may be totally off, but so are we having to remove a level at a time, or do we just do what we need to do and God just totally wipes away that top thing and all of the ones, the rest of them fall like a house of cards? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, what you need to do is you get a strategy from heaven to do whatever it is here, because what required here may be very different from what's required somewhere else.
Okay.
I'm not going to formalize anything, because that's what people do. They get some revelation, they write a book, they tell everyone else this is the way to do it. People buy the book, they try and do it, they get disappointed because it didn't work.
Yeah.
It worked for the person who heard the revelation and they did it, and then everyone else tries to copy it, and it wasn't their mandate. So you need to find the way that God is calling you to do it, and do it, and then share the principles with others, but don't tell them what to do. Because it will be very different in every place. But the result will be that you will remove the legal rights that every one of those things has to be in positions of authority, and then you have to see the correct angels, whatever they are, you know, hierarchy of angels, one of those orders of angels, they will be assigned. And then there will be an investment that takes place, they will take their positions on the thrones, and then they're waiting for you. Because they're not going to do anything without you.
They're waiting for us to do what?
They're waiting for you to take your positions in the heavens, become lords, kings, and sons and start administrating with them for them to begin to change the culture and the outworking. One of the 12 chancellor's houses is the House of Culture. And that is to effectively change culture, not just for this age, but the ages to come. I mean, I've been in there a few times, and it's like I looked at this stuff and think, we're never going to do this. You know, looking and thinking, this is impossible. And you say, no, that's not for this age. That's for one of the ages to come. But there was stuff for this age that we have to bring in alignment with righteousness and justice and all those things.
What is an age?
An age is a period of time that's coming. So we're in
time, centuries time.
No, I'm not talking about there are
linear.
Yeah, I'm not talking about linear time in the same way. There, when Jesus returns, and time as we know it is removed, and there is no more energy and enemy, then we will go into the next age. And then that next age, whatever that will be, we will fulfill our mandate in that age, and then we'll go into another age.
Wow.
And there's ages to come, it says in Ephesians. There are ages to come. And as you mature and grow, as you're faithful in those ages, you will end up in positions of sonship doing really cool stuff. It was like I was talking to someone that were laughing about, they watched one of my things online about, someone was asking me about birthing galaxies. I can't remember, it might not have been here. I think it was someone yesterday or before. And it was like, I can't remember it because I have so many of them, but they laughed. And it was like, they were saying, well, you know, am I called to birth a galaxy? I remember saying something like, well, you may have a mandate to do that in the future, you know. And they were like, well, what would I call it? And I think my thing was, well, it might be a little arrogant to call it after yourself. But the universe is expanding. You know, it is. Well, how do you think it's expanding? Because something is being created and going out. You know, and we are made in the image of God to be creative, and therefore what Jesus has done, he wants us to do as co-heirs in the kingdom. So, you know, don't limit yourself. You know, I mean, I have birthed a galaxy, and I, you know, because I was taken out one day, you know, it's just one of these things. I mean, it's like, I don't know what I was doing. Don't ask me how to do it. You know, it's like, I had no idea what I was doing. I'm out there, I'm sort of in this place right at the edge of the galaxy, and it's like, obviously, you have all the wonderful sort of star, but there's obviously dark matter and dark energy, which is needs to be brought light back into. So when you birth something, you're releasing light into that to draw that to create light, get things. That's the sort of, you know, as scientific as I'm going to get with it. Because I really haven't got much more revelation of that. But I was there, and it's like, in my spirit, something just erupted out. And it connected with this, and I saw all this thing. And it was a particular shape. You know, it wasn't, you know, we have a spiral galaxy, the Milky Way. You have that sort of Milky Way, and there are other shapes. This one was like this. It was an infinity sign. Because that is the sign of eternity, the pathway of what will, what was, what is, what will be. So as this whole thing comes out and it takes this shape of this thing, and I'm like, whoa. Now, I have not quite got the maturity to know how to govern and rule that. So I assigned an angel to it. Because I got a lot to do. But what God was doing was almost like, I give you forerunner experiences so that you have some sense of these things are there, that when people talk about it, you can say, yeah, but we're a long way off that yet, in a sense of the ages to come and that type of, because, you know, all the angels that fell, you know, black holes are out there because of the angels that fell. Black holes are groaning with a B flat sound. very deep, 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 deep groan. I think it was like 270-odd octaves below the piano B-flat. But a groan. I mean, it's scientific. You can go and, you know, it happened to me. This is a funny story. I was doing a sort of a group like this with another church in our area, leading them on an activation about engaging the garden of their heart and stuff. So I just lay down, because it was quite a long activation, and I set it automatically on PowerPoint just to keep going until all the things had sent, all the slides had done and whatever. So I just was just like, so I was there just relaxing, thinking, oh, I'll just relax until they finished. I didn't engage myself, because sometimes I engage myself and I get lost, you know. So I was there. This portal opens up right in front of me, and this hand comes through and yanks me right through. And literally, I was gone completely. And I thought, oh, what am I going to do if I'm not back in time? You know? So, I mean, you think stupid things sometimes. And I thought this stupid thing, and I was pulled out, and there I am, right in front of a black hole. Like, right in front of the event horizon of a black hole. And I'm like, and I'm feeling this rumbling. And I felt this rumbling, rumbling, rumbling. And I'm like, my mind is like, nothing can escape a black hole, because that's what my thing had taught me. You know, light goes in, nothing can come out. And so I'm there, and I, you know, it's what you talk. It's rumble, 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 and I'm like there, and I'm there for a while, and I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, what is this about? You know, it's like, you know. So eventually, you know, there was a few other bits and pieces that went with the story, but to cut it short, it's like eventually I sort of come back through. And I have this sense that there's black hole and there's this noise. So then I, you know, carried on with the exercise and carried on. So I went home and I Googled sound coming from black hole. And I found that NASA had discovered, you know, using all these radio telescopes and all this stuff, there is a frequency, a sound, a rumble, low B-flat coming out of a black hole. Because it's the groan of creation. And it's calling sun. So I know that I'll go back one day to that black hole and bring light to it.
So did it call you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it had a literal hand, but something pulled me through anyway. I was out, because probably I wouldn't have come through unless I was grabbed, because I would have thought I'm staying here to do this, you know.
And what did you say you were going to go back and do?
Bring light to it. Because we are beings of light, sons of light. In the first creation, before everything else, we were luminaries that brought light to the earth. And, you know, when let there be light, you know. Some of us were light. Yeah. So, anyway. So we'll get to fulfill that obligation one day in the ages to come. Now, some people get caught up in this stuff now. I know it's all fun and fanciful and a bit of this, but some people get caught up with it now and they try and do this now and they forget they're responsible for this planet. We have to get this planet back into its rightful place. Then, because if we don't, there ain't going to be an age to come until we deal with this age, and we've seen the restoration of all things in this age. Now, I know there are teaching about different ages of the church and the eight ages of the church, and you know, I know some of that, but I'm not really talking about that. That's within this age, and all those different ages of the church age and the ecclesia age and the kingdom age and the age of rest and stuff. No. Yes. Oh, yeah. It is. Absolutely is. Because that's why Jesus said, if you're faithful with little, he will invest you with much. So if you're not faithful with Jerusalem and then Judea and Samaria, you aren't going to get to the ends of the earth, and you're certainly not going to get to the solar system, the galaxy, the universe, or any other dimension that exists. Because you are created in the image of God with creative abilities. You know, a lot of time, recently over the last 6 months, God has been asking me to walk with him. He keeps coming and says, son, let's go for a walk. Walk with me. First thing he says, come, let's fire walk. So I'm thinking, I'm not really sure I want to go. But I did. And, you know, and then he kept saying to walk. We kept walking. And, you know, one of the places we walked, sort of opened up some of an understanding of some of this. And we went onto the Firestones, and I've never walked with God on the Firestones before. I've walked on the Firestones numerous times. Five or six of those times has taken me to a deeper level of understanding of what the revelation within those fire stones for mankind is about. And it's gone to an eternal perspective of it, which was just amazing. But I walked with the Father on these fire stones. I mean, it completely frazzled my mind. And this is why I've had to deal with rewiring my mind from to the mind of Christ's perspective, because I could not contain and gauge, because we were starting to walk on these stones and he was unveiling the creativity that was in me. And, you know, we're talking about galaxies because that's part of the created thing and it will continue to increase. But there's more than that, you know. And, you know, I don't think I'll share too much more about that, but because I'm not fully functioning in it. But it just introduced me to there is way, way more than I ever imagined or thought or ever could imagine or think. And when you walk with God and he starts to expand your consciousness to start to engage the mind of Christ, it's like there's no limitation to it. My mind is limited and finite, and I need to change that and break the limitations of it so that I can engage even to the things I was sharing this morning, the areas of my mind which are not yet accessible, which were once. But it goes beyond that, you know. So there's so much more that's coming for us as sons of God. We're sons of God. You know, Jesus actually said we're gods. No, that will really freak religious people out. But he did say it. And he was quoting one of the Psalms. Because actually it says, you are gods. Well, I'm a son of God, then I must be a god. But I'm not God. This is the thing. I am not God. There is only one God, Father, Son, and Spirit. I am not him. But I'm made in his image, and mankind made in his image is supposed to be sons of God. Well, if you're a son of God, then you must be godlike, godly, godliness, not God. So don't quote me and say that Mike says that I'm God, because I very clearly am, you know, because if I was, you probably wouldn't be here, you know. So in reality, but we're supposed to see that there is so much more to sonship than our minds at the moment can contain, and God wants to expand it. So I've had 6 months of mind expansion without LSD. Yeah. Principality, powers, rulers.
So, if I'm understanding you correctly, these are thrones.
Yeah.
Being angels on them are appointed.
Yes.
And who appoints them is determined by either God appoints them or the devil.
They are, at the moment, the devil has appointed them, because they are fallen angels that's on most of those things. Because Adam, when Adam was called to rule the earth, he had access to the realms of heaven, to walk in the realms of heaven, and he had access to the atmosphere of the earth so that everything in that atmosphere can envelop the earth, so he's not in one place. You know, it's like, so we're here. The atmosphere is all around, so we are working above with those to effectively administrate the atmosphere. It's not our role to administrate the atmosphere or to be on the thrones, but we're on the thrones above that cooperate. So it's about our role. That's why we need people on benches over cities and areas and regions called by God to effectively establish legislation and government. But the outworking of a lot of that into the earth comes through the atmosphere of the earth that starts to change the way in which people receive what we do when we're on the earth. Yeah.
So we're not ruling. One thing that helped me to teach that is that, you know, Clinton and Don and I could be a bench over Dallas, and then three more people could be a bench over Dallas, and three more people could be a bench.
Yes.
Yeah.
All with different mandates.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, you know, sometimes, you know, when I first started engaging with people with benches and all, people were just like, yeah, there was quite a few people who sort of hadn't quite dealt with the need for position. And so they were like looking for I am over this. I'm the bench over the US. You know, and someone sort of said that to me. I'm on the bench of three over the US. I said, which one? And they looked at me, the bench. I said, there's thousands of benches over the US. Do you think you're the top bench They're not, no top bench. There's no hierarchy of benches. There's just mandates to fulfill God's purpose. And it's like, there's loads of them. And it's not like, hey, I'm the great I am because I'm on a bench. It's like, we're there to serve. A bench serves. And if you want position and recognition, don't go for the job. You know, because you won't get any.
Three, just like Father said.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there statutes of limitations, so to speak, on benches? I mean, once on a bench, are you on that bench forever? Or does God change assignments or whatever?
Yes. There may be seasonal appointments because there are lots of things that we have been called to do. You know, I'm on 3-4 benches in various roles and different things. I am not on all those benches forever because I'm there to help prepare a place for others to go and sit in. You know, so it entirely depends on the mandate. And when I talk about mandates, we'll look at mandates and stuff. Some of them are time sensitive, some of them are seasonal, some of them aren't. So it isn't like, if you're going to get your identity from that, don't go for it. Deal with that first. Because it has to be a position of serving. It's never going to be something to fulfill anything in you. If it is, deal with that. You know, really deal. Make sure you deal with any of those type of thoughts and intentions or motivations, because they'll be trading wrongly in those things. Now, God is really gracious, and He will enable people to do stuff even if they're not always ready. And the position will start to challenge things so that they do have to deal with things even though they're in the position, because it will force things to the surface. So, you know, I'd always rather to be proactive than reactive. So I would rather try and sort out as much as I possibly can before I get to a place where that position is going to put pressure in me to force things up that I need dealing with. So, you know, if you feel called to things, cleanse your gateways, cleanse the motivations of your heart, deal with those things so that actually when you're in those places, those things aren't going to come to light.
So you know. Basically you're saying is cover your own
life. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've learned a lot when it comes to establishing these things. And I can tell you many, many things not to do, having done them. Because, you know, I mean, when we first started this, I mean, when Ian Clayton came to us in 2011, we had him, he stayed with me for a week. We were like kids in a sweet shop, you know, candy store, you call it. Just to make sure you understand what sweet shop meant. Sweet shop. What you call candy, we call sweets. Sweets. Yeah. And we had a great time. And he shared, you know, where he started sharing about the Beit Din and the seven and the different Hebrew structures and stuff like this. And we had already had a three. And we had a leadership team and three. And so we thought, oh, this, we stumbled across something fortuitously, in a sense, but actually the people who were the three, you know, weren't the right people for a bench of three, as we found out. And so we sort of said, yeah, this is absolutely where we need to see the government come. This is what's gonna. So we took it on board. We you know, went for it for a year. Well, best part of probably 7 or 8 months we were at it, and you know, struggling. You know, really struggling in some areas. And it's like, then Ian came back the next year, and it's like, we said, look, can we have an evening where we talk to you with all the leaders and whatever? And oh, yeah, yeah. So we sat him down. It's like, you know, bench of three, bench of seven. Look, can you give us some wisdom and insight? And he's like, nah, we tried it. Didn't work. You know, don't know anyone else who's trying it that it's working. You're on your own. You know, oh thanks. A lot, you know, because I was hoping he was going to be able to give us some stuff, but all he said was, you know, work out your stuff, you know. So I was like, okay, we're going to have to work this out. Now, being forerunners, you have to work it out, and you can provide help to others, and we do that in the legislative stuff. My whole desire is to help people and say, look, don't go into this with a rose-colored spectacles. It's going to be wonderful. you know, our first bench of three lasted for almost a year. It was one of the hardest years of my life. It was like, it was so hard. It's like I'm there wanting to empower the other two in this bench, you know, and they're just waiting for me to do everything, you know, looking to me all the time. And I'm like, no, you know, and my wife was one of them, you know, and it's just like, as you can imagine, that was not a tension-free year in our house. As I said before, my wife is mercy gift, I'm prophet teacher gift. It's like we really had to learn to resolve, you know, these various things. And at that point, she was, you know, she's doing fantastically in this stuff now. I mean, she's doing wonderfully. But to start with, you know, she sort of, you know, an event happened which highlighted the intimacy of my relationship with God. And, you know, when I first started teaching the original leadership groups that we had about, you know, how to engage, how to do your gateways and all this stuff, you know, they were saying, well, can you give us an example? What do you do when you engage God? So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So I said, right, close your eyes and don't look at me, you know, but listen. So I closed my eyes, you know, imagine they weren't there, and just went through for an hour how I engaged God, opening my first love gate, engaging in intimacy, all this stuff. And they were like, afterwards, just like, oh, you know, and they were like, oh. And I'm sort of like, look, you find your own way, but it's like, it's going to be intimate. So I'm going home in the car on the way when my wife's there. She's quiet. And I know when she's quiet, something's going on. So get home. Before we go into the house, I say, are you all right? Yeah. So she said, you don't need me, do you? So I said, what do you mean? Well, I've just listened to you in your relationship. You don't need me. So I said, look, no, I don't. I do not need you, because all my affirmation, everything comes from God. But I want you. I want you to be part of this in me. I want you to be my wife. I don't want you to be God. I want you to be my wife. And my wife's relationship with me should be very different from God's relationship with me. But the insecurity that she felt, because I was expressing how intimate I was with God in this way, she felt insecure. And, you know, I'm not the most sensitive at times, you know. Honestly. And, you know, our sort of redemptive gift's different. Our language of love is different, which took us a while to get over to and stuff and whatever. And so it's like, I said, look, no, I really don't in that sense, but I want you to be part of my life. We're one in these areas, whatever. So she sort of took on the thing of, you know, how do we do this stuff? Well, I'm going to find my own way to do it. That was her thing. I can't do it your way. So I said, that's okay. That's great. I'm sure God will find your way. So about 6 months later, I said, well, how are you doing? How's it going? It's not. So I said, well, why don't you just try this way to start with until it becomes a way that you're doing? And so eventually she did, and she discovered, yeah, she could do all this stuff in her own way. She's not me, she's her. She found a way. She's on our bench of seven. She's the angel of the house in the church. She's one of our bench of 12. She runs our day center. I mean, she's just fantastic in what she does. You know, she does stuff I couldn't do, you know, and she's amazing. But she had to find it her own way. And we all do. You know, we all have to find our own way in it. It's not something that you can look at someone else and say, I want to be like them. You have to be you. But you can look at someone else and say, can you help me to find a way of doing this? Which is what I love doing. You know, I want to help introduce to people a way for them to get on this path and then to walk this way. You know, so it does take some, you know, working through. So our whole bench of three, bench of seven, eventually, you know, God, in his grace and infinite wisdom and mercy, released me from my wife to be part of our bench. It was a wonderful day for her and me and the church and everyone else. Because, you know, I was meeting with our regional bench and at the beginning of January 1 year, and we just said, we'll step into heaven and we'll look at the mandate that we each have for a year, but we'll each get one for each other. And it was like really great. And we got scroll for each other, and the scroll that we were given, we got was absolutely spot on. You know, completely reorganization of government, removing of all the barriers between all our ministries. That was fantastic. I had this mandate. I brought it back and it's like, yeah, we're going to be free. You know, so eventually I presented it and I said to people, who would like to resign from the positions they're in? Because God has given us a mandate to completely reassess where we are. And it was just like, oh, these hands were going up, you know. And my wife's hand was up the first, you know. So it was like, oh, okay, that's really great. So I said, right, who feels called to any of these things, positions? And it was like, it was so funny, because two people, they like, if they could have got their hands up as low as they could, they did. And it's just like, and I knew that they were the people, because I asked God who they would be, but I wasn't going to tell them. It's like, I'm going to say God's appointed you, because that's what we did last time. It was like, you know, I believe God has called you to be this. And they were just like, yeah, we'll do it. But actually didn't want to do it. You know, so I learned that's not the way to do it. You have to prepare the place, prepare the call, send the call out. People respond to the call. And these people said, yeah, we feel called, but we're not going to do it. So I said, well, why? Well, we're not equipped. We don't feel we're in the right place. I said, wonderful. Great place to start. Let's just meet together every week. So we met together every week, a couple of hours, every week. It's like we worked through every issue you can think of. First of all, I said, what are all the things you've got against me? Because you must have loads of them. Because we've just gone through a year of hell. So it's that there must... And one of them was, well, you appointed me to the bench of seven. And I've been a thorn in their side all year. And they have made me miserable. Because she was should have been on the bench of three. But she was in the bench of seven. And she's governmental. And they were all sort of... I want to be careful what I say here because they might listen to this. They were all very mercy orientated and people orientated, and they really wanted to love people. What else? They were governmental zilch at that point. They're great now because most of them are different. Yeah. So anyways, so I think this is fantastic because we got everything out. I said, look, you know, because this has got to be trust. Where don't you trust me? Is there anything I've done? And then they said, look, is there anything that you see? Let's get things out on the table. Let's be honest, transparent, real. Took us 3 or 4 months of meeting to get all that stuff out. And eventually, the other two said, and God did personal things in their life at the same time. And eventually they said, look, we really feel now we're willing to accept this call. And we went into heaven together. We got invested. They got things given to them and weapons and steel and stuff. And it's like, and you know, I have a fantastic relationship with them. I mean, it's like, because we worked on it, you know, and we see things in our different perspectives and we honor each other. You know, I come from a sort of apostolic picture. You know, Becky is the lady, she comes from a prophetic sense, and we're quite close in that sense. Her husband, who's is one of them, he basically comes from a ruler perspective. He's a kingly perspective. So we've got a really good government. And people ask me sometimes, do you need that? I said, no, but you have to function in it, even if you're not redemptively particularly that way. That's the governmental function. So we now, as a bench of three, work really well with each other. We resonate with each other, you know.
So yeah. Do you see a connection with the redemptive gifts and people on benches of three and then benches of seven? Because there's seven redemptive gifts.
Yes. It isn't hard and fast. Now, originally, most people who get drawn to the bench of seven often are people-orientated mercy servant gifts. They're not necessarily the most governmental. But they can learn to be and learn how to rule and govern. But now our bench of seven, which currently is bench of five, because two people have moved on to operate and we need to call two more people into that, they are a mixture. So there's an exhorter, there's a prophet teacher, there is a ruler gift, there's a mercy gift. I think it's two servants, mercy, exhorter, prophet, teacher thing. So it helps to be able to see, but you have to honor each other. Because if you don't recognize the differences, respect them and receive from it, you're always competing. As well, because we see things differently. You're supposed to see things differently. That's the point. But you get one piece of the jigsaw that you put to the other pieces of the jigsaw, then you see the whole thing. So as a bench of three, you know, we work really well together like that. But there have been occasions where I've had to say to them, look, I'm not objective in this situation. I want you, and I trust you, to be able to speak the truth into my situation, particularly when it came to traveling. You know, whenever I got an invitation to travel, it was, no, don't need to travel. I kept saying no. You know, it's like, because, hey, I don't need to travel. I'm talking to people all over the world. You know, and it was like, and it wasn't until God twisted my arm, because he showed me the US in a picture, and he showed me different things, and it was like other things, and it's just like, you know, you've got to say yes. You know, and I didn't trust myself to say yes at that point. Now I do, because now I've matured, and, you know, I carry much more of a sense of, okay, God, whatever you say, I'll do. Yeah, but then I didn't. So I said, look, I'm submitting my diary to you, because I trust that you will be objective when you hear an invitation. And we talked about it. It wasn't like, you know, but I felt, no, I need to submit this, because actually at this point in time, I'm feeling I'm not quite sure that I would always say yes to the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I trust them to do that. And we've done that in several things where we needed to find a heavenly solution to something. And one of us was a bit too involved sometimes. And you can't necessarily always see when you're too involved in something. It helped. That's why there's three. You know, and we never do anything unless we're in complete agreement. There's no sort of majority. I am not the senior. There is no senior leader in a bench. You know, although I carry the blueprint, I established the church years ago. You know, I had most of the blueprint, and I'm the sort of visionary. It's heaven's blueprint, not mine. It's God's. I submitted it completely. When we formed a bench of three, I totally submitted that we are equal in all things. But we're different, and we carry our different bits, and we honor and respect that, and that's how it works, you know. But you don't have to have, you know, ruler, king, prophet, or whatever. You know, you can have any, but you will function and receive that direction in it. So a mercy gift can be on the bench of three. But what they do when they step into heaven is governmental, and God will release government through them because they'll seek him. That's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so, yeah, we've been, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes, you know, and genuine ones. Not because we just didn't know. You know, God allows us to make mistakes because you learn from them a lot. And we learn how to deal with dynamics that were in place. You know, it's like, for me, I'm empowered. I want to empower you to do it. You know, so I want to encourage you to do it. So we have a bench of seven. Yeah, you have permission. You can go and rule. Go and establish the environment. And they're all like, we don't want that responsibility. You know, well, why are you in this position? Well, we're called by God, but we don't want to exercise the responsibility. So it's like, no one said that deliberately, directly, but that's what they felt. So it's like, okay, there's a bench of three. We observe. Because every time we had a bench of a 12 meeting, we would say, how's things going? You know, how's this going? Give us a report of this. They're all quiet. You know, because it's like, we don't want to say anything. Why don't we say anything? Well, we might get it wrong. And then you'll tell us off. Yeah. So that honestly, every time we asked a question, they thought we were telling them off. Because there was a dynamic in place to do with responsibility, and that mostly came from other churches and other situations, because they were in fear that they were going to fail and be told off and get it wrong. So we had to do several court cases to deal with that dynamic. When we did deal with the dynamic, they felt totally different. I mean, so much so that they came to me, you know, as a bench, they came to seven, they came and said, we don't want you to speak on Sunday mornings anymore. So I'm like, okay, what's the rationale behind that? Well, you're sort of teaching up here and all the people are down here. So I'm like, okay, I'll find another way of doing it. So then as a bench of three, we thought, okay, if that's the case, what's the strategy to do that? So we said to them, go back to God and ask for the bigger picture of what that strategy is. So they come back, they go and seek God. Actually, we do want you to speak on a Sunday morning. We just want you to speak to someone else other than everybody. So I thought, well, that's exactly what I'd like to do, because actually then I can really speak to the people who are tracking this, and then all the people who are new, all our, because we've got people from a rehabilitation unit there, you know, and we have new input every six, well, it's a thorough, complete turnaround. They do a 6-month program. They stay on in our move-on accommodation for 9 months. Some of them then stay on and live in the area and join the church and stuff. And it's like, but they're there. I mean, if they were listening to some of the stuff I say, it's just no idea. So it was like, well, yeah, this is awesome. You know, so they would have never, ever done that a year before. Because they would have thought, oh, we can't go and talk to Mike and say we don't want him to say anything. You know? It's great. You know, even if I didn't have to say anything, it'd be like, flip, I got every Sunday off. It'd be wonderful. You know, but actually, it worked because we saw, hey, that's not the full picture, but going back, there's more. So they did. Now it's great because we have two gatherings at the beginning of every meeting. People can have stuff in their own thing. They have ministry in there. I do what? We come back together. And then usually the musicians pick up on what's been going on in both rooms and they just facilitate us engaging and doing stuff. It's great. You know, but that took time and it took working through the issues to get to that point where they were confident that they could do this. Because to start with, like most people-orientated groups, they would come together and they would talk about all the problems that people had. You know, then they would sort of have all these woes and how they could try and sort out all the woes that people have. You know, because people have woes everywhere, you know. Yeah. So it was like, when we would ask, well, how's things going? It was like, you know, we have to deal with this, we have to deal with that. So I said, well, why don't you think about stepping into heaven together and getting a mandate for what you're going to do in the meeting? Oh, that's a good idea. So that's what they do. You know, and so now God sets the agenda of what they need to do and how they need to work things out, you know, and they all take turns in facilitating that, so they're all growing in it and maturing in it. Things changed a lot, you know, but it took time, lots of things along the way where, I certainly had to find a way of being supportive without being heavy-handed and, you know, God spoke to me. I think I shared this where I was before, but God spoke to me about this. And I know that there's a balance, the right balance. If you're too directive, then you steer things in your image. But if you're not directive enough and you don't give enough support, then people feel they're floundering, you know? So you have to provide enough. So I was growing tomatoes. So I'm just doing that, tomatoes, get that one. You know, and this year, and I had a greenhouse, and I took my grandchildren through the process, planted the seed with them, pricked out the seeds, got their little seedlings, put them in the greenhouse. So I had these things growing, and then I was looking at, well, what am I going to do now? Am I going to support them? And God spoke to me, and he said, right, there's two ways of support you can have, and I want you to put these three tomato plants with canes. So canes, tie them into a cane. And I want you to use strings, which are, you put a wire across, you put a string down, and you just wind the plant around the string. But it's quite loose, so it's a little bit more supporting, but flexible. So I just did this. So I've been quite keen to see what the results were. Well, the ones that are growing up the canes are all straight, and they reach the top, and I had to pinch out the top, because the greenhouse is only, I don't know, 7 feet high or something, pinch out the top, and they had a certain amount of yield on the plants. And it was good. The others are the most misshapen things you can think. They're winding here, bending here, whatever. But they're probably about 9-10 feet high, but they just bend. And they have a massive crop, but they all look individually different. They all have different shapes, but they're supported. And this is where, in terms of, if you're going to be operating as a bench of three, you give enough support that people can go their own way and do it their own way, but they'll get to the result of producing fruit, and they may look a lot different than you might think it's going to look like, but actually it's the way it should be, rather than you provide too much support and it becomes rigid and then people are restricted to only this way, and it'll never work like that. And so that's why leadership has to be foundational to support, encourage, release, and give enough support that people don't feel I can't do this, but not too much that tells them you have to do it this way. And so that's sort of what happens when you start these sort of governmental things. It's a fun journey. with some heartache at times, and for me, some frustrations, because, you know, God often gives me visionary things, and I have to wait for them to be outworked. You know, I would have done some things 2 years ago, and we're still waiting for the outworking of it. But it wouldn't be like it should be. It would have been like I wanted it to be, and that's not it. You know, so I have learned patience, a lot of patience. You know, and I realized that the season of this is for the maturing of people, not just to get it done as quickly as possible. Because we're all about people, not about the function of doing something. You know, it's about the people and how they grow and they mature in being given the encouragement and support and finding everything out. So all our benches seven, you know, have grown in some of that. Our seven mountains, we have seven mountains, which are seven spheres. We have five other mountains as well, which are more ministry orientated of how we do things outwards. But the seven mountains of the church, those seven mountains, they all have benches on them. I was not allowed to go onto any of those mountains. All I was allowed to do was clear off what was on those mountains and deal with what was on the mountains so that the mountains could be occupied. And 2011, I started doing that, sharing, hey, we have these seven mountains. You know, eventually people started coming saying, I feel called to that mountain. I'm like, oh, praise God. Somebody, you know, and it's just like, eventually they all of them, and then so I said, look, you need to call others because you need a bench of three. So I said, well, how do we do that? Well, I said, well, let's see a strategy from heaven. So God said, give them a Sunday so they can share the vision of what they've got so far, the mountain, resonate with other people. And eventually all of them shared, and then people come together, and now they've all... So then they get their blueprint. I didn't tell them what their blueprint was. They got it. I just said, here's the mountain. And it's like, here's the name of the mountain. The name of the mountain, totally different from what I would have thought that meant, because I would have done it from what my understanding was. They needed to do it. You know, and it takes much longer than you think it will. But it's better to take the time that it takes and try and force the issue, because if you force the issue, you'll be forcing people. And you'll be trying to get them to go at the pace that you want them to go rather than the pace that they need to go to mature into the role. And that's, you know, I could tell you a whole list of things not to do.
Church looks completely different.
Yeah. Well, it does, because people are functioning. You know, I'm not responsible for that. That's their responsibility. So they have totally right to organize. You know, sometimes they say, we really feel we need to do something corporately on a Sunday altogether. I was like, great. Awesome. Do you want me to do anything? No. Great. And sometimes they'll say, look, we would like you to do this for everybody because we feel something we want you to impart into. So I'm saying, so I go and ask God if I got a mandate to do it. And then I'll say, yeah, that's fine. Which happened a few weeks ago when we were doing this psychic fair thing and we were out there sharing the good news. You know, we had some people who weren't at home. So I said, look, you know, is there anything you'd like me to do so that I can let you go out and do those other things? So I did a question and answer session, which is still the latest session on the website, because I haven't done anything since then. And, you know, then in the afternoon I went over and went out into the thing and did it. So what time are we going on till?
Four?
Okay.
If you want a break, you can come back to it if you want.
Well, does everyone want a brief break? Yeah.
Evening session starts at 7.
Okay.
So we have
that. Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's have a 10-minute stretch and toilet break, and we'll try and finish this.